This BBC podcast is supported by ads outside the UK.
Hello, I'm James Kamara-Sami. Thank you for downloading the BBC's World Tonight podcast for Monday, the 20th of January, as Donald Trump takes office for the second time, saying he will halt America's decline. We have an assessment of his inaugural address and the flurry of executive orders that followed. We're live in Washington for a reaction from a friend of the newly inaugurated president and on America's southern border after Mr. Trump declared a national emergency there. We'll also speak to Lord Glassman, the only Labour politician invited to the inauguration, about what the return of MAGA to the White House means for the government here. He's back. The second Trump era began in America today, with a mixture of the usual formalities modified for Washington's current sub-zero temperatures and a flurry of last-minute pardons and first-day executive orders by the two presidents to hold office on the same day. Well, those formalities are still taking place as we speak, and we'll head to Washington in a couple of minutes to soak up the atmosphere. But first, a flavour of the earlier part of the day and an inaugural address that proclaimed the end of America's decline and a new era of free speech, one that promised an end to government diversity programs in a country that would be colourblind and merit-based. It was given, not as usual, on the steps of the Capitol building, but inside in the rotunda, the first time an inauguration has been held there since the second time Ronald Reagan took the oath of office in 1985. Inside the rotunda, a choir performed for the arriving guests as the president-elect was popping into the White House for the briefest of handovers. Welcome home, the greeting from Joe Biden to the man he replaced and who was about to replace him. After a short meeting, the two presidents drove to the Capitol building in the same limousine. Oh, to be a fly on the wall. A show of unity far removed from what happened 4 years ago, when Donald Trump snubbed the Biden inauguration.
Ladies and gentlemen, the 42nd President of the United States, the Honorable William J. Clinton, accompanied by the Honorable Hillary Rodham Clinton. The 43rd President of the United States, George W. Bush, accompanied by Mrs. Laura Bush. The 44th President of the United States, Barack H. Obama.
Once inside, a roll call of presidents and first ladies, with the notable exception of Michelle Obama, took their seats alongside friends, supporters and titans of tech to watch the change of power.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
I, Donald John Trump, do solemnly swear.
That I will faithfully execute.
That I will faithfully execute.
The office of President of the United States.
The office of President of the United States.
And will, to the best of my ability.
And will, to the best of my ability.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
Preserve, protect, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
So help me God.
So help me God.
Congratulations, Mr. President.
And then came the inaugural address for the millions watching around the world and the 600 or so in the room with the golden tickets. This was his message.
The golden age of America begins right now. From this day forward, our country will flourish and be respected again all over the world. We will be the envy of every nation, and we will not allow ourselves to be taken advantage of any longer. During every single day of the Trump administration, I will very simply put America first.
America first, the theme that ran through a speech light on foreign policy and underpinned his priorities, from his pledge to drill, baby, drill, to his plan to deport what he called millions and millions of illegal immigrants.
First, I will declare a national emergency at our southern border.
He said he wants illegal immigrants out, but he wants the Panama Canal back.
Panama's promise to us has been broken. The purpose of our deal and the spirit of our treaty has been totally violated. American ships are being severely overcharged and not treated fairly in any way shape, or form, and that includes the United States Navy. And above all, China is operating the Panama Canal, and we didn't give it to China. We gave it to Panama, and we're taking it back.
Joe Biden sat stony-faced, head sometimes bowed, as his presidency was roundly repudiated by a politician who equated America's powers of survival with his own.
Those who wish to stop our cause have tried to take my freedom and indeed to take my life. Just a few months ago, in a beautiful Pennsylvania field, an assassin's bullet ripped through my ear. But I felt then, and believe even more so now, that my life was saved for a reason. I was saved by God to make America great again.
And that greatness, he added, wasn't confined to this planet.
We will pursue our manifest destiny into the stars, launching American astronauts to plant the stars and stripes on the planet Mars.
That certainly pleased a beaming Elon Musk, whose SpaceX company also wants to put life on Mars. The promise, then, of a new space age for the Golden Age, which Donald Trump insists has just begun. And some of the moments from that inaugural address, there was actually a second speech to his supporters afterwards in which he said, well, some of the things that he said he'd wanted to say in the speech was persuaded not to, but he said them anyway. We'll perhaps get onto that a bit later. But first, we're going to cross now to Washington, D.C., because beyond the walls of the Capitol building, thousands of Trump supporters flocked to the city today just to be there, as did Nuala McGovern. She's there for us and joins us now. Nuala.
Hello, James. Good to be with you and your listeners. Yeah, would you believe it's about 200,000 people that were expected to Donald Trump's inauguration when it was scheduled to be outside. Of course, only 20,000 could make it into the Capitol One Arena. People there, which is in the Chinatown area of Washington, D.C., are expecting Donald Trump to address them anytime soon. I can see his family have just arrived. Where I am instead, I'm in the Hawk and Dove Bar. This is the oldest bipartisan political bar in the city, so I am told. But today, I have to say, it was just one side of the aisle that was here, and that was Trump supporters, dozens of them, either wearing the red Trump bobble hat or those MAGA red baseball caps that we've all become so familiar with over the past decade. The bar has been jammed. It was a really interesting experience to watch them react to the inaugural address of Donald Trump that you were detailing just a few minutes ago. The Trump supporters have staying power. Last night at the rally down at Capitol One, they were out in the freezing rain that turned into sharp hailstones that would hit you on your face. Today, we're getting down to minus 12 Celsius to give our listeners an idea of just how cold it has been. And they're still here 12 hours later, both on the streets and in this particular bar. They are on every corner. Good-humoured exchanges between them and the National Guard that is also everywhere. But I want to bring our listeners some of their voices. We've been speaking to some of the supporters in this bar for the reactions to the inauguration and to Mr. Trump's speech.
His speech was exactly what he ran on. And he's taken off in the helicopter.
They're fine leaving.
I was Biden leaving. We're from Texas, so we're big on energy in the border. And he spoke to both of those, and that fired us up. We just like a president who's going to back the oil industry, back the energy industry, get us to energy independence. That's what we wanted to see, and that's what he said he was going to do.
We think this is a historic inauguration for us in our lifetime, and once in a lifetime opportunity to see Donald Trump back in the office and bringing us back to where we want to be as a nation together.
I'm pretty pumped. Like I said, it's just fun to be amongst like fellow Americans. I think this is the oldest historical thing our country does, one of our oldest traditions. So I think regardless of what side you're on, it's just fun to kind of soak in the patriotism.
Well, I feel great. I think our country's going to be in a much better position globally. And I do think that we will move forward and be a stronger country. We look very forward to the next 4 years.
some of the people I have spent the day with here at the Hawk and Dove Bar, just a few steps from the Capitol building. Let me bring in Chris Ruddy. He is CEO of the conservative news organization Newsmax, also a longtime friend of Donald Trump. Met him first back in the late 90s, I understand, Chris. You're very welcome to the world tonight. I'm curious of your thoughts of the inaugural speech that you heard from Donald Trump inside the Rotunda.
Well, I think if you compare that speech, and thank you for having me on, if you compare that speech with the one he gave in 17, I think it's a lot more conciliatory, it's a lot more positive, I think it's a lot more unifying. He talks about today being the birthday and the day we honor the death of Martin Luther King, who's in the pantheon of great Americans, African-American civil rights leader, and he talks about fulfilling his dream. You wouldn't have heard that, I think, in Donald Trump's first speech.
Yes.
So I think that's a very positive note. And, you know, he really was elected on a multi-ethnic coalition.
I was struck by that. Also, I should probably, for our listeners, say that there is an ethnic diversity as well to the Trump supporters that I have come across over the past few days. Perhaps that is different from 8 years ago. I think I would say it is. But the Washington Post, if I could get your thoughts on this, Chris, they're saying that President Trump, may pardon some January 6th rioters and commute the sentence of others. Some would say that is not aligned with his promises that he gave to his followers on law and order and being a tough on crime leader. What would your response be?
Well, let's see what those pardons entail. I don't think he's going to be pardoning people that struck or engaged in violence. I am still baffled that people were arrested. The Congress is an open building on any given day. You can walk into the Congress. There's video that they removed the Do Not Cross signs hours before any protesters that day showed up. They walked in. There's videos of them being invited and waved in by Capitol Police.
Well, there might be that.
In the hallways. But we know
the violence that took place. We know the chants. Yes. We know Congress people from both sides of the aisle had to shelter. But it was a violent day.
Yeah, but we have a criminal system in this country. You don't just arrest people en masse. You arrest them for actually engaging in specific crimes. If somebody
committed violence,
they go to jail, they get arrested. Somebody walks into a public building that's open to the public.
But there was due process. If people are arrested and then if, in fact, charges against them do not hold up, of course, they would be released. But that was an extraordinary event in American history.
People should know in Britain and around the world that people were arrested and put in jail for just entering the building peaceably, never did anything. Now, I believe anybody that committed a crime or violence against a police officer or anyone else, they should be, the key should be thrown away. But they didn't do that. They just arrested people, anybody on a videotape, just so you know, and they ruined their lives. So the president's going to, and then, you know, we had 6 months of riots in this country after George Floyd, and the Biden people were giving them, paying their bail, and some of them were.
Well, people would also push back on that character.
Police officers.
Chris, please let me speak, because I have. I do know what I'm speaking about. And Chris, if you don't want to listen to me and engage with me in respectful dialogue,
to believe that if you think everybody that went into that the House of Representatives, the Capitol
that
building,
is not
was a criminal,
what I said.
Well, I'm sorry.
What I said is that there was due process that has taken place, and President Trump might, in the next hour or so, give clemency to some of those. I wanted your thoughts
Let's
on.
Talk
it.
About
but
if the you're going Biden to try, family that. Why don't we talk about the Biden family? The
today is the inauguration,
the
and I wanted
family.
To speak to you. The reason you were brought on
about,
is
like,
to speak about some
of
these
of the
issues.
Biden family?
Well, I want to talk about the issues of the day. This is not about President Biden. This is about Donald Trump. You have a relationship with him. If you're not prepared to speak to me in a respectful and civil way on some of these issues, we can let it go there. But
no,
I thought
you
that you would have
to offer my point of view to your listeners.
What do you
listeners?
Think you have
you're
just done over the past?
That.
No, Mr. Ruddy, what have you just done over the past few minutes? You have been given airtime to put your point across, and that's what I wanted you to do.
No, but every time I talk, you raise your voice and say that I'm not talking about the topic that you want me to talk about. I think you're grossly unfair.
That is not it at all.
Anybody listening to this conversation The minute you heard something you didn't like hearing...
And I am not raising my voice.
The minute you heard something you didn't like, you were angry that I was talking about it. So this idea that
I have
a
one bit angry.
Source,
I am delighted that you are on our airwaves
you're very
and
happy.
Was looking forward to speak to you.
I can tell by the tone of your voice that you're very happy.
I was going to also say that what you called riots, others would not characterize it like that, but you are putting across your point of view, Mr. Ruddy, who is the CEO of the conservative news organization Newsmax, but in that time of back and forth, I would have preferred to speak about more issues off this inauguration day and off your friend Donald Trump, but... if indeed you do not want to do that, there is not much that I can do. And I have to hand it back to my colleague, James Kumarasamy.
Nuala, thanks very much. We're going to talk now about the inaugural address, and we can speak to our North America editor, Sarah Smith, who's also in Washington. Sarah, what stood out for you in it?
The huge number of promises and the very big promises that Donald Trump was making. In some ways, it sounded like one of his campaign speeches, though it was delivered in a much more somber and presidential way. He ran through that long list of things he promises that he's going to do to usher a new era in America and be an absolutely transformative president. And that is everything from taking drastic action on the southern border and to attempt to deport millions of undocumented immigrants in America, transforming America's electricity and energy generation with new drilling across the country, including in the Arctic National Wildlife Reserve, getting rid of wind farms where he can and replacing it with oil and coal-generated power, and also some cultural issues that he wanted to touch on, like declaring officially that there are only two sexes and that they cannot change, and getting rid of diversity initiatives all the way through the government.
Yes, very little on foreign policy, apart from repeating this call to take back the Panama Canal. And, well, he went beyond the Earth. He was talking about sending people to Mars. But when it comes to some of the big issues of the day, he mentioned the hostages being released in the Middle East. He didn't talk about Ukraine, for example, did he?
He didn't mention it at all. And of course, we've never really known what he meant on the campaign trail when he said that he could end that war within 24 hours. And we haven't seen him attempt to do anything in that direction yet. We know that he spoke to President Zelensky shortly after he was elected. We believe he's spoken to Vladimir Putin as well. But we don't know what's been discussed when it comes to Ukraine. Now, the only thing he said specifically, actually, which would be of interest to anybody in the UK or other American allies, was that he does want to use trade tariffs basically to bolster the American purse at the expense of countries who are exporting to America, because he thinks that that's a very useful way of raising revenue in the United States.
And then there was this interesting second speech to supporters just afterwards, in which he sort of said, well, this is actually what I wanted to say in the main address, but I was talked out of it. But he let on what he was going to say.
Yes. Well, that is the thing about Donald Trump, isn't it? That, you know, his advisors can keep him on the straight and narrow and try and keep him to the script for only so long. And I'm watching now what's happening at the Capital One Arena, where about 20,000 of his supporters are gathered. And he is walking in with Melania right now to rapturous applause and being greeted by supporters who've been waiting since the early hours of this morning to see him there. And he's going to deliver another speech when he gets to the stage, when he eventually makes it through all of these applauding fans who are greeting him there. And that's much more likely to have more of the red meat in it that his Make America Great Again supporters enjoy so much. And we think that on the stage there, he might also start signing some of these presidential executive orders that will bring into force the things he was talking about in his inaugural address, like, for instance, declaring a national emergency on the southern border, which would allow him to send military troops to the border, and probably withdrawing from the Paris Climate Accords and other things that he wants to do that he can do simply by signing an order tonight.
One thing before you go, Sarah, what about the pardons that Joe Biden issued just before he left office, including to close family members? Pretty unusual, I think.
highly unusual, both that he was giving them to five more family members after a few weeks ago, you'll remember, he preemptively pardoned his son, Hunter. Well, five more Biden family members were pardoned today, along with some people from the Trump administration, whom Donald Trump has since fallen out with and said that that he may wish to seek some retribution against, and everybody who was involved in the Congressional Select Committee that investigated the January the 6th riots. They all got these preemptive pardons. So President Biden said he's not saying that they necessarily have done anything wrong. In fact, they may well not have done. But just in case, Donald Trump and his allies do try to investigate, prosecute, in some way persecute them, essentially, Joe Biden wants to spare them that by saying that he in advance pardons them, even if anybody accuses them of doing something wrong.
Sarah, many thanks. Our North America editor, Sarah Smith, there live in Washington. Yes, I can see Donald Trump now about to appear on stage there at the Capital One Arena. He's got a big book in his hand. I suspect that is a book full of those executive orders that Sarah was talking about. And as we've heard, he's already declared an emergency on the southern border with Mexico. He did that, it has to be said, back in 2019. Let's speak to our correspondent, Will Grant, who's in the south of the United States. He's in San Diego. Will, we understand there are 10 executive orders today focused on what Donald Trump calls common sense immigration policy. What do we think he means by that?
Well, I'm standing and talking to you literally on the border between San Diego and Tijuana, one of those areas that's really going to be affected by the decisions and announcement made by Donald Trump today. First and foremost was a huge cheer that went up among his supporters here when he announced a national emergency at the border, a declaration that will allow him to send troops, allow him to send the military to the border to, as he sees it, help cope with the situation here. But there were other things there too. He's already said that part of his immigration policy and his essentially clamp down on border security will involve what he calls the biggest mass deportation in American history. So we're expecting raids by ICE agents to begin, immigration agents to begin at some point in the very, very near future. And also he immediately, for example, shut down a legal pathway into the United States called CBP-1. Now that's an app introduced by the Biden administration under which prospective immigrants, people seeking asylum, got a date, got an appointment with the US authorities to make their case. Around 30,000 people are found now that their dates have essentially dried up, they're vanished, they're cancelled, and the door to the United States is closed on them.
Of course, executive orders get round having to go through Congress for everything, but they can be challenged in the courts, can't they? And one of the other things he's seeking to do is to end what's called birthright citizenship. That's when the children of migrants who are undocumented, that means that they're going to be no longer automatically considered US citizens, even though that is in the Constitution. So is this something that is likely to get challenged?
Absolutely it is. Yeah, I think both of those points that you've mentioned will face legal challenges. We've already seen, in fact, that the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, has lodged its first legal challenge to this idea of shutting down CBP-1 for those who already had appointments. So there is a legal challenge to that already underway. And I think the Biden administration put this in place in order to create normalization at the border, legal pathways in for the Trump administration coming in. They've never liked it. They've said it's essentially a concierge service for migrants, although by shutting it down, they will have always expected there to be some form of legal challenges to it, I think.
And put in context what he's saying. The speech essentially said, look, everything's wrong, we're going to right it. But I mean, the Biden administration clearly had a lot of problems with its immigration policy. It was a big factor in its election defeat. But in terms of numbers, certainly in the last year or so, there have been lots of illegal immigrants sent out of the country.
Yeah, so I think that the sort of high watermark in terms of the Biden administration was December 2023, when somewhere between 250,000 to 300,000 people were detained at the border. Now, that's a very, very large number. That has shrunk now to about 50,000. So although Donald Trump speaks about an emergency at the border, the truth is that he does inherit a situation that is significantly better than it was a year ago. That in part is down to President Biden's own executive orders that he put in place to deal with just how bad the numbers had become under his administration, including allowing border agents to send people back if they were, as the wording of the executive order said, overwhelmed by the situation. So yes, Donald Trump will enact these measures, but in essence, I think emergency at the border is a little in the eye of the beholder.
Will, many thanks. That was Will Grant in San Diego there on the border with Mexico, and apologies for the slightly glitchy line there. A quick reminder, if you want to listen back to any of this programme or to previous ones, you can go to BBC Sounds, where you can also download the podcast. The main headlines so far on The World Tonight. Donald Trump has been inaugurated as the US president for the second time, promising a golden age of America. Mr. Trump has been signing orders to prevent illegal migration, encourage oil exploitation, and to scrap government diversity programs. And the 47th US president is currently appearing before his supporters at the Capital One Arena in Washington, D.C. Now, there was a British contingent at the inauguration. It was largely confined to figures on the political right, people such as Nigel Farage. Boris Johnson was there, Suella Braverman as well. But there was one Labour peer in attendance, Maurice Glassman. And Lord Glassman joins us now. Good evening.
Good evening. Well, good afternoon.
Well, I was going to say good afternoon to you. Well, first of all, how did you get the invitation, if I may be so bold as to ask?
Yeah, well, about 8 years ago, I got a book through the post from someone I'd never heard of called J.D. Vance, called Hillbilly Elegy. And he was, in fact, inquiring about building a New Deal coalition in the Democrats. I mean, I don't think he was a Republican at that time. And we had a very nice correspondence, which I then forgot about. And then I noticed with interest that he'd become a Republican senator, then the vice president. Candidate, then the vice president, and very kindly he sent an invitation.
And there you were. And what was the atmosphere like?
Well, quite shocking in some ways. I mean, the Democrats in the room were stupefied by what they were hearing. You know, let's conquer Panama. The reassertion of sovereignty. You know, he announced a Department of External Revenue that he's just going to put on tariffs. So in a way, it was the crumbling of the 40-year globalization agenda just before their eyes. There was a sense of shock. It was a very dignified occasion in lots of ways. You know, priests, rabbis, trumpets, music, but deep down it was incredibly partisan.
Well, what does it mean for the government here? What does it mean, do you think, for the relationship or the ability of Keir Starmer to forge a relationship with the Trump administration?
Well, it's going to be extremely exacting because everybody I've spoken to, senior Republicans, want a good relationship with the UK. But they don't think at the moment that the government understands, you know, sovereignty, the end of globalization. They're not really viewing Britain as an ally in the goals that they have set themselves, which is essentially a rewriting of the international political. I had the most surreal case where I was being lectured by two Republicans that Labour wasn't pro-trade union enough, just to give you some idea of how things have changed.
Gosh, what did you say?
You know, I've been trying against my nature to be very diplomatic, and I say that things like that's interesting.
Well, what about diplomacy? Lord Mandelson is due to become the next UK ambassador to Washington. Rumours that he's not exactly the person that the Trump administration wants, even that they might block him. What are you hearing?
Well, I don't think they're rumours. I mean, they see Mandelson, Peter Mandelson, as an absolute icon of the very thing that they loathe. You know, the area of progressive globalization, international rules-based order, the rule of lawyers, all of these things. This election of Trump is an incredible rejection of all that.
Do you think he's going to be blocked?
I don't know. What I'm hearing is that they're furious about the Chagos Islands, for example. If, you know, I'm sort of hearing that if Britain
cancels the Chagos Islands deal, then they're putting through.
Well, look, I mean, you're a Labour peer, but you're someone yep. who's known for coining the term blue Labour. You've been promoting yep. Policies, tougher policies on things like immigration and crime, which yep. chime more, I guess, with the MAGA philosophy. What would your advice be to the government if it wants a closer relationship with the Trump administration?
Well, ever since Ernest Bevin in 1945, there's been two basic principles of Labour foreign policy. And the first is that it has to have a very strong alliance with the United States. And the second is that it must also have its own autonomous military nuclear deterrent. Now, at the moment, what they're saying is that we've allowed our armed forces to decline. So what I would suggest is that we rebuild our army and find points of alignment with them, particularly around the end of globalization. This has long been a left-wing dream, and they're really doing it. So I think on things like industrial policy, trade union power, these things could be points of alignment. But in order to do that, Labour's got to really understand that there's been a fundamental change over there.
Lord Glassman, we'll let you get back to the festivities in Washington. Thanks very much for joining us. Well, let's put this speech into some kind of historical context. What kind of story was Donald Trump trying to tell about what his second term is going to be like? Where do his words and his promises fit into the broader sweep of American history? We're joined to discuss that by Emily Jasinski, a Washington correspondent at Unheard, before that editor of the influential conservative news site, The Federalist, and the historian based in the United States, Sir Simon Sharma. Welcome, both of you.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi there. Simon, if I can start with you, what did you make of this speech? How does it compare to past inaugural addresses?
Well, I think he was probably trying to summon the spirit of Ronald Reagan's first inaugural speech, you know. But Ronald Reagan, of course, was
that's the golden era stuff.
Well, yes, exactly. But Ronald Reagan really was not into dark portraits of American carnage. Instead of he was, you know, what he wanted to do was project. Coming off the disasters of hyperinflation and the Iranian hostages, a sense of American goodness, that strength and power and goodness. Donald Trump, you know, whoever writes the speeches, and it was a very kind of sober, you know, there are two Donald Trumps. There's the kind of statesman AI generated Trump off the teleprompter, which is what we heard, subdued and genuinely restrained. Then there was the speech at Emancipation Hall, which was a kind of orgy of his golden hits of paranoia and conspiracy theory, calling the January 6th committee political thugs and making threats against Nancy Pelosi. But the inaugural speech was the sort of Norman Rockwell's Saturday Night Post vision of, you know, a golden American past to which we'd return. The problem was that the content of it was fantasy and very often lies. I mean, the tariffs, for example, are not paid by foreign governments or foreigners at all. They're paid by importers. And either he doesn't understand that, which is not good news for a presidency, or he doesn't want to communicate the truth about that.
Okay, well, let's turn to you, Emily. Was this a positive vision or dark vision, or how would you characterize the speech?
You know, I actually think the Reagan parallel here is a really interesting one, because Donald Trump's American Carnage speech in 2017 was sort of universally understood, even by Trump's own allies, to be dark. He felt he was entering a dark period in American history, and his job was to, you know, as he would put it, make America great again. But there was a lot of looking back at what had been lost. And I think that's where Donald Trump today tried to blend that with something that was very immediate and urgent. And I think Reagan is a good comparison here. He talked a lot. He tried to evoke this idea of light and sunlight. So his speechwriters, I think, really wanted the takeaway to be golden era, that repeated over and over again. We saw his aides posting that on their social media accounts afterwards. So I think what we saw actually was this mashup of American carnage and the future is now, kind of, where he's trying to say, you know, there was this dark period, but it is now over. Not it may soon be over, but it is now over.
Talking of the future, Simon, what about Mars? We of course remember Kennedy and the moon. Is this
precisely
Trump and Mars?
Bingo, you've got it. It's the Kennedy. You're never going to put a man on the moon. And but of course, you know, around him were kind of two of the rocketeers, you know, in this kind of techno-feudal oligarchy. He was surrounded by Zuckerberg, the two rocketeers, of course, being Elon Musk and
Bezos.
And Jeff Bezos, you know, kind of.
Elon Musk was whooping, you know, two thumbs up.
Elon Musk later, by the way, managed to give a Nazi salute, which, you know, I mean, maybe people didn't notice. Maybe it was like Dr. Strangelove. It was an involuntary muscular misfortune. Well, I think the crucial thing about the future is Trump will have a honeymoon, a very odd, but I'm sure kind of sort of powerful honeymoon, and that people, and even those who didn't vote for him, I think, are less frightened by him, whether they're right or wrong. I think they're much less nervous about him. But for the government itself, it's a matter of when the rubber hits the road. Both tariffs, and especially if there's mass deportation of undocumented immigrants, that will make the agricultural industry pretty much collapse in Central Valley and Imperial Valley. Both of those are massively likely to cause inflationary spikes. That is very much down the road. The speech, though, and the aims are, there's this kind of childlike passion for, he talked about territorial expansion, the weird reverence for William McKinley, who started the war against the Philippines. There's this sense in which really it's a sort of cowboy imperialism that he absolutely loves. Now, the issue for everybody else is whether he really is going to do it or not.
Well,
and nobody knows.
No one knows.
Probably not even him.
Well, what about his supporters, Emily? How do you think it's going to go down with them? Do they like all the talk of, you know, getting the Panama Canal back and, the broad range of issues that he brought up?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's not just from a policy perspective. I think it's actually, you know, when he was speaking about, we heard him use the phrase manifest destiny. I think just to a lot of Americans, that hits them as pride in their country. And whether or not that's right or wrong on a policy substantive level is sort of a different question, though, what he's conjuring when he uses phrases like that. And when he talks about Greenland and Panama, and if, you know, you wanted to have a debate with Trump supporters, Republican voters, maybe even swing voters about the policy implications of all of that, I think what he's doing, it would be different than how people react kind of in the moment, seeing him in the Capitol Rotunda talking about that. You know, he said in reference to the Panama Canal that it wasn't, you know, that we didn't give it to China, we gave it to Panama, and now we're taking it back.
Yeah, I mean,
and what was interesting.
Go on, sorry.
Look, but I have to say, nobody voted. Nobody. I can think one person voted for Donald Trump. There were all sorts of perfectly good reasons in order to take back the Panama Canal.
I think what they voted for was a sense of national vitality, and I think that's what he intentionally is channeling. And I think in some ways we've seen him before go down paths that actually aren't exactly people's vision of national vitality. I mean, TikTok is already a huge debate. Tom Cotton, for example, is already disagreeing with Donald Trump's support now for TikTok. He doesn't think that's a sign of national vitality. I think there are a lot of Americans who agree with Tom Cotton on that.
An interesting 4 years to come. Look, thank you both very much, Sir Simon Sharma and Emily Yashinsky there. Our closing headline tonight, Donald Trump has taken the oath of office at the US Capitol for the second time, ushering in what he pledged would be a thrilling new era of national success for the United States. The 47th U.S. president is currently signing hundreds of executive orders reshaping federal policy without the need for congressional approval. He's declared a national emergency on the Mexican border and is beginning the process of deporting illegal migrants. Well, that is The World Tonight. This is James Kamara-Sami. I'll be back tomorrow at 10. But for now, from me and everyone on the program, good night.
Yoga is more than just exercise. It's the spiritual practice that millions swear by. And in 2017, Miranda, a university tutor from London, joins a yoga school that promises profound transformation.
It felt a really safe and welcoming space. After the yoga classes, I felt amazing.
But soon, that calm, welcoming atmosphere leads to something far darker, a journey that leads to allegations of grooming, trafficking and exploitation across international borders.
I don't have my passport, I don't have my phone, I don't have my bank cards, I have nothing.
The passport being taken, the being in a house and not feeling like they can leave.
World of Secrets is where untold stories are unveiled and hidden realities are exposed. In this new series, we're confronting the dark side of the wellness industry, where the hope of a spiritual breakthrough gives way to disturbing accusations.
You just get sucked in so gradually, and it's done so skillfully that you don't realise.
And it's like this, the secret that's there. I wanted to believe that, you know, that whatever they were doing, even if it seemed gross to me, was for some spiritual reason that I couldn't yet understand.
Revealing the hidden secrets of a global yoga network.
I feel that I have no other choice. The only thing I can do is to speak about this and to put my reputation and everything else on the line. I want truth and justice. And for other people to not be hurt, for things to be different in the future.
To bring it into the light and almost alchemize some of that evil stuff that went on and take back the power.
World of Secrets, Season 6, The Bad Guru. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.